welcome everyone to our program today, Using Music at Work, Balancing Creativity and Compliance. And very happy to have a variety of participants on the webinar today. We have heard from attorneys and librarians and IP administrators, as well as media rights managers, who are all curious about this very important yet very complex topic, and representatives from companies such as insurance underwriters, food service providers, media companies and telecoms, even a nature conservation foundation. So a really, I think, representative slice of American business life, the North American business life, I should say. So whatever you do, whatever business you're in these days, your company is a creative powerhouse. And setting aside formal titles and departments, your employees are creators, producers, and publishers of content. And they don't just reside in the marketing and corporate communications departments. These creators are spread out across the org chart, developing presentations, videos, web content that help motivate and train employees, engage with customers and prospects, recruit new talent, and importantly, build your company's brand. These creators rely on external content to get the job done, and increasingly that means using music. And as Hans Christian Andersen pointed out, where words fail, music speaks. And I think we all recognize just what the author of those wonderful fairy tales meant. Music does speak to us in ways that go beyond words, and people recognize that within your organizations. And for many of you who are legal counsel, fielding one-off employee requests for this kind of content can be time-consuming, and of greater concern is when the employees aren't asking you about these issues. They may indeed be unaware of the licensing challenges associated with using music in presentations and videos. We're going to get to the heart of that matter in just a moment. I do want to introduce everyone, though, to Copyright Clearance Center. Some of you may know us well. Some of you may be joining us for the first time. There's a great deal about us online at our website, copyright.com. And Copyright Clearance Center, with its subsidiaries Rights Direct and Ixis, is a global leader in content workflow, document delivery, text and data mining, and rights licensing technology for thousands of publishers, businesses, and academic institutions. Our solutions provide anytime, anywhere content access, usage rights, and information management while promoting and protecting the interest of copyright holders. We have locations in the U.S., the U.K., the Netherlands, Spain, Romania, and Japan, so a global reach for our solutions around licensing and content. And again, much more about us at copyright.com. But at this point, I want to introduce our special presenter today, our speaker, Joy Butler. She joins us on the line today. Joy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chris, and good afternoon.
Yes, and we're very happy you can join us. Joy is an attorney and author with more than 20 years' experience counseling clients on business, licensing, technology, and media matters. Through her Washington-based private law firm practice, she provides transactional and advisory services to mid-market companies and small businesses. And Joy is particularly adept at explaining complicated legal issues, and these are some of the more complicated ones that I've come across, Joy. And you do that in understandable terms and providing practical solutions. And I have a copy right here in front of me of your new book, which is the second edition of the Permission Seeker's Guide Through the Legal Jungle, which gets expressly at these issues around clearing copyrights, trademarks, and other rights. You are also the author of a blog that regularly looks at issues in intellectual property and licensing, and that is online at guidethroughthelegaljungleblog.com. That's a mouthful, but we are very happy you can join us, Joy, and it's great to have someone of your background. Just briefly, tell us about your experience as an attorney here. You come to these questions with a very special perspective.
That's true. As you said, I'm a transactional attorney, so most of my work involves negotiating contracts and providing advice to my clients. One component of my work is doing rights clearance work for my clients who are creating content or using content. And my goal always when doing that rights clearance work is making sure that the content they're producing or putting out there is not creating any type of copyright or trademark problems and is not going to produce any legal challenge for the client. Now, like many legal issues, rights clearance questions can be gray or unclear. So sometimes the right approach to a rights clearance question depends on your risk aversion. So sometimes I may tell my clients, well, here's the conservative approach that offers the lowest risk of a legal challenge. And over here is an approach that might carry a little more risk. So you might hear me say that once or twice in the next hour.
Well, it's interesting because certainly that approach begins with education, so you can know where you sit on that spectrum. You have to understand what the issues are, and as we joked before, when it comes to copyright, if you're confused, you're beginning to understand the problem. So we're going to try to sort out some of that confusion today. We have a lot to get to today with you, Joy, but we are going to get through a variety of topics that really cover these issues pretty well, and that's going to be from a variety of music cases and licenses. Really, what is the potential cost of infringement? So you begin to know where you sit on that continuum of risk aversion that you just spoke about, Joy. And we're going to stress there are solutions that are readily available to people, and certainly there's a continuing need for building copyright awareness within organizations. So we'll get to all of those points. But first, let's look at some of the ways that music is being used in the professional environment today, Joy.
Sure. So as you said, Chris, music licensing can get complicated, but here's an easy-to-grasp general takeaway for today's webinar. If your company is sharing music externally, like on the internet or in an advertisement or at a conference, it's very likely that your company's use of that music requires a license. And even if your company is sharing music only within the organization, there may still be music licensing requirements. So in terms of some of the ways a company might use music that requires license, one, of course, is using music in an advertisement or a promotion. Now, depending on how you acquire the music, you might actually need two separate licenses for your ad or your promotion, a synchronization license for use of a song, and a master use license for the sound recording. And we'll talk about sync and master use licenses a little bit later. You may offer music at a live public event, which requires a public performance license. And as we'll discuss later, these public performance licenses are normally obtained through ASCAP, BMI, or CZAC. If you're incorporating music into training materials, for a business presentation, this is where people sometimes ask about fair use and whether or not fair use can apply to this use by the company of the music. So copyright use is an exception to copyright protection that allows you to use a small portion of a copyrighted work without the copyright owner's permission. But the issue is that fair use is very subjective, it's very fact specific, decided on a case by case basis. So there might be situations or circumstances where using music in training materials has some credible fair use arguments. However, those situations might not be as broad as some people might think.
Well, in fact, Joy, I'd just say that in our approach to educating about copyright issues, we look at fair use at Copyright Clearance Center as a kind of a defense rather than a right, and it's something that really requires some clarification there. It's not a right to use that material, but it's a way to respond if someone says that that was used inappropriately, and you say, well, I used it, it was fair use. So it's never a guarantee and something that people should approach very cautiously, at least in the view of Copyright Clearance Center.
It is certainly not a guarantee, and whether or not you're going to rely on fair use, as you imply, often needs to factor in how much risk you're willing to take. And you know, some uses with reliance on a fair use defense are riskier than others.
Right. Well, so those are the kinds of ways that music is being used in the professional environment today. And you've already begun to sort of put the toe in the water around the ways that we can license that use to be sure that we are, you know, using material appropriately. Here's where we go back to that point that licensing is so complicated. It is, particularly when it comes to music licensing, this is one of your bumper stickers, Joy. Music licensing is not intuitive.
Right. So what I really like to say is that music licensing is not rocket science, but it is also not intuitive. One of the challenges is that the music industry uses different names for music licenses depending on how you're using the music and on whether you are using the song or the sound recording. So one of the first steps in understanding music licensing is understanding the distinction between a song and a sound recording. A recorded song has two separate copyrights. There is a copyright in the song, which consists of a melody and any accompanying lyrics. And then there is a separate copyright in the sound recording, which is the recorded rendition of the song. Typically, but not always, there will be separate owners for the song and for the sound recording. The song copyright is normally owned by the songwriter or the songwriter's music publishing company, and the sound recording is generally owned by the record label that released that recording. All right, here's where it gets a little bit tricky. The same song can have multiple sound recordings. So I'm going to use the example of the song I Will Always Love You. Dolly Parton wrote that song in 1973, and several different artists have recorded renditions of that song, including Dolly Parton, Whitney Houston, Kenny Rogers. So the song copyright for I Will Always Love You is owned by, you know, Dolly Parton through her music publishing company. Now, with respect to the sound recording, there are different owners. So the 1992 Whitney Houston rendition of that song is owned by, you know, the record label that released it. The Kenny Rogers rendition of that song is owned by Kenny Rogers label, and so on. So as we talk about different music licenses, I'm going to focus on the licenses that would be required for video and audiovisual presentations and for training materials. The licenses to acquire these. So I'm going to the next slide, first public performance licenses. So as the name implies, a public performance license gives permission to perform music in public. Now the public performance of a song almost always requires a license. In contrast, the license requirements to perform a sound recording in public are more limited, applicable typically only when the sound recording public performance is offered via the internet or via other digital means. So today I'm just talking about performance licenses for songs. So if you play a song like in a retail store or at a conference or in a restaurant, those are public performances of the song, regardless of whether you render the performance by a live band, by a CD, by a DJ, or by your smartphone. You need a public performance license for that performance. Now, most public performance licenses are issued by one of the PROs, and in the United States, those PROs, or performing rights organizations, are ASCAP, BMI, and CZAC, and probably many of our audience members have heard about one or more of those companies. They've been around since the 1940s. GMR is a relatively new PRO that was established just in 2013. Now, each PRO controls a different catalog of songs. So typically, the PRO will issue these blanket licenses allowing you to publicly perform any of the songs in that PRO's catalog. So again, let's suppose you wanted to do a public performance of I Will Always Love You at the company's trade booth on a trade show floor. You would need a public performance license from the copyright owner of the song. And that song's copyright owner, again, is Dolly Parton through her music publishing company, Velvet Apple Music. Velvet Apple Music is affiliated with BMI for their public rights licensing needs. So if you have the appropriate blanket license from BMI, you can publicly perform I Will Always Love You, as well as the other 8.5 million songs in BMI's catalog. Now, the PROs make it pretty easy to get public performance licenses. ASCAP, BMI, and CZAC have online presences where you can determine the specific license that you need and pay for it right online.
We're going to speak now about not the live performances, but the use of music in videos and films, which is becoming, as we said in the introduction, increasingly common. And this is where we get to that issue you've already raised around sync licensing and master licenses. Tell us about that.
Right. Okay. So suppose, again, you wanted to use I Will Always Love You in your company promotional video. You would need a sync license in the song. Again, the copyright owner of the song is Dolly Parton's Velvet Apple Music Publishing Company. So you would need to approach Velvet Apple Music directly to request and obtain the sync license. Let's say you got the sync license for I Will Always Love You. You now need to decide which recording of I Will Always Love You you want to use. If you chose Whitney Houston's 1992 sound recording performance, you would need to approach the sound recording copyright owner of that, which at the time of release was Sony BMG, and request the master use license that goes with it. So there's not a specific name for every different way in which a company might use music. For example, there's no specific name for using music in your training materials. But if you were to use your music in the training materials, the licensing would be more similar to the licensing you would go through for a use in a video, since you would need licenses in both the song and the sound recording.
And I have to say, Joy, this is an area that really does require people to focus on, because it comes up so often. And I was reminded of that just the other day when a media company, and so a company that ought to be aware of copyright issues, seeing as how that's their own bread and butter, was using a song by a very well-known band within a promotional video. And I was just—it struck me that it was unlikely that they would have received a license for that. And they are the types of businesses that are making more and more use of these kinds of works in their videos and films. And really, they ought to be aware of these issues at least as much as everyone else, perhaps more so, because again, of the background in publishing and media. So what we're talking about here is not the rare thing it once was. It's not something only done by agencies. It's done by everyone. We are talking today with Joy Butler. She's an attorney in Washington, D.C., and the author of a book called The Permission Seeker's Guide Through the Legal Jungle. And she's helping us understand the issues around using music at work, balancing creativity and compliance. And we ask you to use the chat box in the lower right corner of the screen. Let us know what's on your mind. If you have any questions, we'll get to as many of those as we can. And Joy, I've been just now talking about a media company that used a very famous song in a promotional video. That's what potentially could be infringement. And you want to tell us about the risk there, the exposure, and what the cost could be of such an infringement.
Right. So if you use music without a license, you are infringing. And some of the legal consequences of infringing music include if you've posted the music online, the copyright owner might send a takedown notice to your web host provider or YouTube or Facebook or whatever other social media network on which you've posted the video containing the music, requesting that that infringing material be removed. And your web host or YouTube or Facebook, they're going to comply because their compliance is required for them to receive insulation under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act or the DMCA, which protects them from infringing material their users might post. So, and that's called a DMCA takedown notice. Whether you are using the material online or offline, the copyright owner might send a cease and desist letter, which basically says you are using our material in an infringing way and we want you to stop your infringing activity. The letter might or might not ask for a licensing fee as a result of your infringing activity. Of course, in the worst case scenario, the copyright owner might file a lawsuit for copyright infringement against you. And if that happens, then you have the cost of defending the lawsuit plus payment of any damages in the event you lose the lawsuit, plus the potential to have to reimburse the copyright owner for the copyright owner's legal fees in the event you lose the lawsuit.
And so, I'm sorry, Drew, I was just going to add that apart from all those other costs to using work without permission, imagine the reputational damage that could result. Again, if you use my example of the media company, if the word got out that they were infringers of copyright, that wouldn't look very good.
No, it would not. And in this context, people sometimes ask, doesn't the copyright owner have to send that DMCA takedown notice or send a cease and desist letter and give me a chance to remove the material before actually, you know, filing a more public lawsuit? And the short answer to that question is no, the copyright owner doesn't.
They can go straight to court. All right. Well, there are a variety of sources that people go to for music today. Obviously, in the digital world, access to every type of work is so much easier than it ever used to be. And I guess you're going to tell us a bit about where companies traditionally go, or regularly go, I should say, to find the music they use in these kinds of materials.
Yes, and I'm going to focus on sources of music for your videos, for your advertisements, for your training materials, because as we discussed, getting the licenses for public performances is fairly easy via ASCAP, BMI, and CZAC. And I'm going to look at a few characteristics for each source of music. How difficult is it to obtain? What's the cost? How well it suits the company's needs, and whether or not there are any risks associated with it. So, all right, using existing popular music, that is the most difficult method. And by popular music, I mean music that's been on the radio, that's charted, and that's well known, whether it's music from today or music from the 50s. The benefits to using that music are obvious. It's immediately recognizable and can quickly convey to your audience the mood or the time period you're trying to convey. So to get the sync license that you would need, you have to contact and negotiate directly with the music publisher or song copyright owner. And to get the master use license, for the recording, you have to contact and negotiate directly with the record label. And unfortunately, very often you won't even get a response to your license request. The price tag tends to be in the tens of thousands of dollars, depending on the popularity of the song you want to use and the way in which you want to use it. So another option is using production company music. Now that's very easy to obtain because production music companies, they are in the business of licensing you music. So they often make the process very easy for you with websites where you can preview music, pay for the music and download the music immediately. Production companies offer one-stop shopping where you can get both the sync license and the master use license. The cost can be as low as $30 for some production music. It's usually less than $1,000, in most instances, significantly less than $1,000. There is minimal risk, but you do want to read the license agreement because for some production music companies, there might be limitations. For example, some don't allow you to use the music in a political advertisement. So the downside here is, while production music may be very good, it's probably not immediately recognizable music. You can also use music by an independent artist. And by independent artist, I'm referring to a musician whose music isn't distributed by a major music company, so not as well known. This music is going to be less expensive than popular music, but probably a little more expensive than production music. It depends. It's probably not immediately recognizable, although it might be recognizable in a particular niche, depending on the musician's fan base. One potential risk here, indie musician groups who produce and perform original music, they might not be as diligent and they might have fewer resources when it comes to documenting the ownership of their music they create. That can sometimes cause disputes among the group's members, and if your company is acquiring music in that way, you don't want to get involved or caught in the middle of that type of a dispute. So if you're using this route, just want to be aware of this potential risk and do your due diligence and make sure your licensing agreement has provisions, representations, and warranties that protect the company. Another option some people look at sometimes is using music under a Creative Commons license. So Creative Commons, that's a nonprofit organization that provides free license formats to copyright owners who want to relax some of the restrictions on their creative work and make it more available to people. These licenses are free. The material is normally easy to find and download online. There are different variations on Creative Commons licenses. Some don't allow commercial use. They are higher risk because they contain no warranties, representations, or indemnifications. You might also commission original music. So the expense here depends on the commercial stature of the musician writing the commissioned music for you. Some production houses will connect you with musicians who can compose and record original music for you. It can be a lengthier acquisition process just because you need to take the time to find the musician, wait for the music to be written and to be recorded. And while the music is not going to be immediately recognizable because it's brand new music, it can be tailored to the company's needs. And if you have a well-drafted agreement for your acquisition of the original music, there should be minimal risk. Okay, some of the other online sources. YouTube, they have this mechanism where if you post a video on YouTube that has unauthorized music in it, the copyright owner of that music might allow your video to stay up on YouTube. And that's because YouTube gives the copyright owner these methods of monetizing the video, where the copyright owner is going to get some of the ad revenue that might be generated from the video. So this method is, of course, risky and not completely reliable. These other methods, iTunes, Pandora, other streaming music services, these are not sources to be used for videos or for advertisements. Some of these streaming services do have business or commercial licenses that allow you to use the music they provide for public performance, like normally as background or mood music, like the music you might hear in a doctor's office or at the grocery store.
All right. Well, you know, covering all these various sources of music, Joy, as I listen to you, it made me think that, you know, we often listen to music and we really only are sort of paying attention to the creative side, to the beauty of the song or the power of the lyrics. But it's so clear as you go through this that music is a real business and a complicated business at that. So appreciate that review of those various sources for using music in professional materials. And at this stage, we'll remind people again that if you have a question for Joy Butler, you can use the chat box in the lower right corner of the screen and let us know what's on your mind. And Joy, you want to address the educational piece of this, that organizations and individuals can, again, lower their risk and understand the issues better if they devote a little time to looking into it and educating themselves.
Exactly. So some of the things they can do include training their staff in basic copyright and music licensing principles, like listening to webinars and engaging in sources offered by CCH. Also, I am a big advocate of pre-clearing materials to be used by the staff that has creative responsibilities. So not only like using production music or stock images, subscribing to those services, but making sure that the people who should be using them are aware that they are there for their use. And then also making sure that people who are creating materials within your company have access to legal counsel if they have questions about using materials outside of those pre-cleared materials.
Right. And you know, there are a variety of other places that people can go, and we can certainly encourage you to check out the variety of educational resources that Copyright Clearance Center makes available online at copyright.com/education, including a variety of videos that you can use within the organization to do some of that basic training and raising of awareness, Joy. And as well, just let people know that Copyright Clearance Center does offer one of those pre-cleared pools of creative materials. We have a solution called RightFind Music, which gives users access to over 500,000 music tracks for use in company presentations and video. So all of that is a great way to build that copyright awareness, and today's presentation with Joy Butler has been an important part of that. And now it's your opportunity to ask Joy a question that's on your mind about the use of music in presentation materials, in videos, films, and in public performance. If you have a question, please use that chat box in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. And Joy, we do have some questions, and we were talking very early on about public performances, and you went to some of the varieties of public performances that are there and what people should be aware of. And Maria is asking about internal holiday parties, always a good time, but where the company itself has hired an outside DJ to play music. Is the company required to get a license at that point, or is the onus on the DJ or the music provider himself or herself?
Okay, so this is an internal holiday party that we're talking about?
That's my understanding. That's what Maria's asking about.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So let's assume it's an internal holiday party. So this is where it gets a little bit tricky. So there is a license required for a public performance of a song. There is no license required for a private performance of a song. So depending on the scope of the party, if we're talking about a group of coworkers only, it may be reasonably arguable that that is a private group, and any music played for that group is a private performance, not a public performance. That issue can get a little more complicated when, for example, the party is held at a venue where one would normally expect a public performance license to be required, like in a restaurant.
Well, that's a good point there, Troy. And indeed, Marie is letting us know that the party will be in the company's cafeteria. So on the basis of what you've just said, that sounds more private than public.
Yes, it does sound more private than public.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for your question, Maria. We have a question from Ekaterina, who sounds like she's a documentary film producer. This one is probably something that catches a great many people who are recording live, whatever that live is, an event, a news story, whatever it is, that often music's there in the background. And Ekaterina writes that she was recording a documentary with music playing in the background, so to say, incidental performance. When it came time to release the produced film, they had to turn to the owner of the music to get permission. And at that point, the owner wanted to charge five figures for the use of 20 seconds. This sounds a bit onerous for a documentary filmmaker, but Joy, what about that kind of occurrence?
That is an interesting question on the incidental use of music. That is a question that frequently comes up for documentary filmmakers because you're running your camera and you might pick up your copyrighted music as well as other copyrighted material in the background. So the question is whether or not you need a license for that. And remember at the top of this program where I said fair use often requires a risk assessment, as do many rights clearance questions. This is one of them. There are certainly people who argue, and there are credible arguments to be made, that incidental picking up of the music in the background during a documentary film can qualify for fair use. Some producers don't want to take that risk, so they will blur out any copyrighted materials, go over the audio sound for any copyrighted music that is picked up.
Right, and I believe it's fair to say that it really depends, too, in that kind of instance, on a sort of sliding scale, how much a film sort of is more entertainment than news. I think in the instance of news, there's a kind of exception for news gathering, whereas entertainment may be more open to requiring a license there, requiring.
Okay, I'm not sure I would say it that blanketly. News gathering is definitely a preferred use under fair use, but just because your programming is news doesn't give it an automatic fair use ticket. And just because your programming, you know, falls outside news doesn't mean, you know, it can't qualify for fair use. I think, as I said, you really need to look at the individual specific circumstances for each use. So when you're talking about like incidental music picked up, you're more likely to qualify for fair use if you're not focusing on that particular music. It really is just in the background. It's for a short period of time.
Right.
As I said,
okay.
Case by case, it's difficult to give generic, all across the board, relevant guidelines.
Right. Well, I think we're getting the picture there that people do need to pay attention. The devil's in the details with these questions. We have a question from Roger, who says that his organization is a nonprofit private entity. And Roger asks, if we want to use recording ABC by band XYZ, it's a hit, to bring on a speaker at a company meeting, to introduce a speaker at a company meeting, where do we start to discover who has the rights? This is important, assuming we have nothing but the recording. I guess there may be some hints. It used to be in the old days, I suppose, the old days when there was a physical record, you could look at the label and see if there was any hints about who the owners were. I'm imagining that Roger may have only a digital file that doesn't provide any hint.
So one of the biggest challenges to doing rights clearance, as Roger's found, is sometimes tracking down and identifying who the correct rights owner is. And so I give a number of hints on how one might look in my book as well as on my blog. But some of the things you might look into if you have the recording is, does it have any metadata? Is it a recording that's listed on one of the streaming music sites that might give some hints about who the rights owner is? Does it have any metadata that might give hints on who the rights owner is?
Right, and I suppose a Google search might be a good place to start to see whether that recording appears elsewhere and might therefore have some of that metadata, as you call it, on that other instance of reuse. We have a question from Ken, who was good enough to get a license with BMI and wants to know, do I really need one with ASCAP and CSAC too? Joy, what about that?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sighing because that's a question that has a few complications that are
becoming more
complicated.
We heard you sigh. Yeah, right. That is. Yeah.
So most heavy users of music for public performance purposes are going to get licenses from all three, BMI, CSAC, and ASCAP. Now, it's possible to get a license with only one if you're going to restrict yourself to performing the songs from only that PRO's catalog. And that can be challenging to do. You have to research every song you want to have publicly performed. That's like one approach to how it has been done. What's complicating this a little bit more is this issue over full licensing and partial licensing that the performing rights organization industry for songs is going through right now. And that is songs often have more than one songwriter. So the songwriters who work on one song might not belong to the same PRO, like one might belong to ASCAP and one might belong to BMI. So there's been some argument in like the last 1 to 2 years as to whether or not a PRO who is representing a songwriter who controls like only 50% of a particular song can license that song on its own, or does it need the other PRO controlling the other portion of that song to join in and license it. So this is an issue that is more significant for heavy users of music, like record labels, radio stations, television stations, restaurants, et cetera. But that is a complication that's come up.
Right. Well, Steve has a question about using music in what he refers to as an educational setting, and he cites two instances. Let's take them separately. So that in that educational setting, he's using music for training of employees in the same company for no charge. Is that considered, I guess the sort of underlying that, is that what would be a private use, or is that a licensable use as far as your experience, Joy?
It's potentially licensable. There are some exceptions to copyright protection that are under the TEACH Act, and that has some very specific guidelines for its applicability. I would need, I, need more details about a specific situation in order to render any sort of an opinion on it. But I will say that just because it's in a teaching context, while teaching is a favored use under fair use, it might not permit as broad a use as some people might think.
And the other instance that Steve is asking about sounds to me even more potentially licensable, and that would be the use of music in an educational setting with an audience of sales consultants and representatives who are not employees. So would you agree that that sounds more potentially licensable even than the first instance, because there it's very much a commercial activity?
Right, but even in that second instance, the description isn't really showing how the music is being used. There might be the instances where fair use is a credible argument for training. Like, let me use myself as an example. I often give presentations on rights clearance matters. So if I'm talking about a lawsuit involving a claim of copyright infringement involving music, I might play a short clip of each selection so the audience can see for itself how substantially similar those two musical selections are. So I'm fairly comfortable in relying on fair use for that purpose, regardless of who's in the audience.
All right. Well, we have a question from Mark, which is interesting because I think it gets back to the distinction you were making early on about the non-intuitive nature of music licensing, and specifically the very important distinction between synchronization licenses or sync licenses and master use licenses. So his question is, what are the concerns about music that's in the public domain? For example, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. So that would have been written in the 19th century, no longer covered, the piece of music itself no longer covered by copyright. But I would guess, Joanne, you're the attorney here, that there would be a recording of it, and therefore there would need to be permission for the use of the recording, and that would be a master use license. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So if you have music that is in the public domain, if a song is in the public domain, then you don't need anyone's permission to use that. But even for classical music, you're going to need a recording. So the recording itself might still be copyright protected, and you would need a license to use that. The issue with a public domain music or any public domain material is making sure it's in the public domain. I mean, there isn't one official list telling you everything that's in the public domain. Like Beethoven's music, obviously, yes, it is in the public domain, but there are other music selections where it's sometimes not as obvious whether it's public domain or whether it's copyright protected.
All right. Well, and Joy Butler, you've been very patient with all these questions. We have one last one so far, and that is if we use music to accompany a training video only to be seen by employees within the company, does that qualify as private use? I think it's sort of a variation on an earlier question, and again, it depends on the instance. But is there
okay,
any
so
general?
Okay, you are using music within the training materials. So one of the issues to think about is, as a copyright owner, the copyright owner has these exclusive rights in the music. So technically, depending on how you acquired the music, once you make a copy of the music and incorporate it into your presentation, that in and of itself is infringement. And I talked about when you're using materials internally, when you're thinking about fair use, a lot of it in terms of the correct approach depends on your tolerance for risk and your assessment of risk. So if we're talking about using music on that's on someone's laptop, and that's for an internal meeting with about, you know, three or four coworkers, well, I would say that's definitely at the lower end of the risk spectrum. If you're talking about, though, using music and training materials that you're going to post on the intranet, or obviously on the internet, or you're using at a larger conference, I would say that is at the higher end of the risk spectrum.
All right. Well, again, Joy Butler, thank you so much, not only for your presentation, but for your candid answers to all of those questions from our audience. There's a great deal more to be said about this. We won't get to all of it today, but you can learn a good deal more about Joy's experiences and her views on her own blog, which is the Guide Through the Legal Jungle blog. There's the URL. You can also look into her new book. We've already had some questions, Joy, for people who want to know how to get the book. I bet there's a link on your blog. It is called The Permission Seeker's Guide Through the Legal Jungle, Clearing Copyrights, Trademarks, and Other Rights for Entertainment and Media Productions. As I say, I have a copy right here, and it is a substantive book. Several hundred pages, goes into things in great detail. You might want to look into that. We at Copyright Clearance Center provide an ongoing series of events around copyright education from our education team, and much more about that at copyright.com/learn. If you're curious to learn about those pre-cleared music tracks available through our own product, the RightFind Music, there is much more about that as well online at copyright.com/music. So Joy Butler, attorney and author, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Chris. And I did want to answer that final question. The book is available at guidethroughthelegaljungle.com as well as at retail and online stores, including Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And you can also get a complimentary excerpt of the book online.
Great. Well, we'll direct people there. We'll do that in our follow-up emails to them following the program. So thank you again, Joy Butler, for joining us today. I also want to thank my CCC colleagues, Allison Anderton and Robert Gagin, for putting this production together. On behalf of all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, my name is Chris Keneally. Have a great day.